Welcome into this week's edition of the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. I'm Ryan Lavner, soon to be joined by Rex Hager. In this week's episode, we're talking about Rory McIlroy back doing Rory McIlroy things. The Super Golf League reemerges as a threat to the PGA Tour. And of course, there is one final tune-up this week at the Byron Nelson before we get on to the PGA Championship. But first, did you know new father John Rahm almost never hits full shots 8-iron through lob wedge? He prefers to hit three-quarter shots that fly low, so a higher spin ball is a necessity for control. That's what he got in the Chrome Soft X golf ball. Did you know what club Phil is tinkering with and potentially adding to his bag? If you like equipment notes like these, you are going to love Callaway's new World of Wonder. Johnny Wonder takes you inside the tour truck, in the bags of staffers on all world tours, and inside the Eli Callaway Performance Center for all things equipment and fitting. What the pros are doing may just help you shoot your best score. Check out callawaygolf.com/worldofwonder today. Rex, you are back from a flight imminently from Charlotte. You had a good week. The Wells Fargo Championship paid off with a great winner in Rory McIlroy, his first win since November 2019. Real quick, what were your impressions of how the Sunday went down? It got to be pretty exciting there towards the end.
It was exciting. It was probably the Sunday I've enjoyed the most for quite a while on the PGA Tour. And that's not to take anything away from Hideki or anyone else that I've covered this season. And I mean, it's no secret I'm kind of in the bag when it comes to Rory. And it's also no secret that he's a media darling. But what this was very much a homecoming. There was so much synergy. There was so much, I don't know if you want to call it origin story here, or however you want to frame it. And I tried to frame it in that sort of way that in 2010, when he was mop-headed Matt McIlroy, I mean, he was a little bit on the chubby side and he was this rising star. He wins on the first time at Quail Hollow and kind of starts this love affair with the golf course. And I was just taken. I knew where I was going with the story and I sort of had to shake myself out of a stupor. And you'll appreciate this as someone who sits in a media center sometimes and has a tendency to get lazy like the rest of us. And
lazy.
Well, no, hear me out. He was finishing up on 15, and I mean, I could kind of describe the media center as a quail, but suffice to say, it's a bit of a walk to get to 16 where the media center is. But I thought to myself, like, I kind of want to see him play these last three holes, and I didn't want to see it on TV. I wanted to be out there.
Not just any three holes, Rex, the Green Mile.
The Green Mile,
I know. We were told a million times.
Very, very good marketing on their part, which we're going to continue to hear throughout the history of mankind. However, I wanted to see how he played that Green Mile, but I wanted to see the fans, because by my best estimates, and I had one tournament official, when I asked him how many people are here, his response to me was, how many did the tour allow us to have? And I said, I believe the number was 15,000. And he said, then we have 14,999. So I think they crammed every last body they could onto that golf course because they want to get back to something close to normal. And it felt like normal. And walking down 18, it felt like normal because it was Rory walking down that particular fairway with the lead about to win. It felt like normal because it was people chanting his name. It felt like normal because he raised the putter over his head like he always does, or it seems like he always does on that golf course. And I mean, I'm not a sappy person, but I got a little warm and fuzzy with that one last night because I felt like, for all the reasons that I pointed out, this was the perfect story as we get kind of more into the meat of the season and back to hopefully something closer to normal.
So a couple things there. Yes, on TV at least, it looked like there were a ton of people there, certainly more than what we saw for the Players' Championship, which to me felt like the most normal event since the pandemic hit in March 2020. I mean, there was a lot of people there, but you're right. Quail Hollow was a different vibe in the sense that I didn't see hardly anyone wearing a mask. Do fans not have to wear masks anymore?
I don't think so. And I mean, it probably depends on – that's probably not the answer to the tour – to give, but I'm going to enforce that. I actually talked to a tournament director, not of Wells Fargo, but another tournament last week about this. And he goes, what am I supposed to do? Send an army of people out to yell at these people to tell them to put on a mask? And that person's probably going to have two or three too many IPAs, as we all know I'm prone to do. Like, what am I supposed to do? And I think that point is very well taken when it comes to the PGA Tour. They can't police this. So, yes, it probably isn't a very good optic on TV, but I don't see any other way around it.
And then there's a couple other things to get into there. I think not just Rory, but over the weekend, we also had a winner on the LPGA in Ariadne Jutania-Garn, former world number one. She hadn't won in 3 years. And so to me, I mean, the theme of 2021, most certainly, other than just we're slowly beginning to see a return to normal, is this slump busting star. It started with Jordan and it continued to Lydia Ko and Hideki Matsuyama and Brooks Koepka and Brooke Henderson. And now you have Rory and Area winning. I mean, it's an incredible storyline, and it's fascinating for us who have to tell these stories, because it all seems to be happening here over the past couple of weeks and in a past couple of months. And I think Rory's return might be the most surprising of all. And the reason I say that, not because I didn't think that he could get back to winning golf tournaments in impressive fashion and even winning major championships, because I still think at age 32, he is more than capable of doing that. But I put it in the context of, look where we were just 2 months ago at the Players' Championship. Rory missed the cut there by a mile. And it was after that Friday missed cut where he stood in front of us and said that he had essentially lost his way because he had gone down the wrong path of trying to chase speed and keep up with Bryson DeChambeau based on what Bryson had done at wing for the U.S. Open. I mean, that is as lost and as confused and as vulnerable as I think we've seen Rory in a number of years, probably since the mid 2010s when he broke off his engagement and then he kind of went on that winning rampage. And so for him to get back in the winner's circle just three events later, I think is a reminder of the fact that these great players are never as far away from winning as they might seem at the time. And I think it's also a testament to the hard work he's put in with new swing coach Pete Cowan. He's gone to this fade off the tee, which a lot of the top 10 players in the world have gone to, just a more reliable shot shape and taking that big miss out of play when you can have a double cross. And so you've seen Dustin Johnson go to the fade. You've seen Brooks Koepka go to the fade. Justin Thomas plays a fade almost exclusively. John Rahm plays a fade almost exclusively. And now Rory, who has hit in his career these towering tight little draws where he kind of pushes it down the right edge of the fairway and absolutely center stripes it. He's now going to a shot shape that 5 to 10 years ago would have been totally foreign to him. But I think can make him an even better player. And so there's a lot to take in with this Rory win, but for me, it's just surprising that it came three events after what appeared to be one of the deepest low points of his career.
I mean, you mentioned Pete. I mean, officially, he's been on the payroll for just 2 months. So it is pretty amazing. And I'm not saying that I didn't expect that from Pete. Both of us have a great deal of respect, and we've seen what his work has done with other players. That being said, you want to know why he's a media darling. And you just pointed it out, because he was able to sit in front of reporters and sort of take all his clothes off. He was willing to be naked in front of us and say that this is as low as I am. I got lost. I chased after Bryson and I wasn't doing the right things. And there was another moment like this on Saturday where I asked him after his round, and it was a 68 and it kept him right there in it. But there was only one blemish. There was a double bogey on 12 when he did hit it left after these extended conversations about, I want to see the ball go from left to right. And I kind of asked him about, you know, what happened there on that hole. And he sort of got that Rory smirk on his face. And he goes, I was trying to hit the proper shot under the pressure. And he goes, I knew I could squeeze a little fade bunt driver out there. And he goes, but under pressure, when I need a birdie on a hole, he had to find out. And it was his little experiment. It was his way of trying to find out, is this going to be able to hold up on Sunday afternoon when I need this? If I need a birdie on 12, am I going to have to be able to hit that high draw that I used to be able to? He didn't hit it. He didn't execute the shot, but I absolutely love the honesty that he had to give it a shot, man.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the first time that he's put all these new learnings to the test in the heat of competition. It's not like, I mean, this is one of the strongest regular season fields of the year. It's a major caliber course in Quail Hollow, and for Rory to stand up and do what he did on Sunday was very impressive. And now, obviously, 1 week out from the PGA Championship, which is returning to Kiwa Island, which of course is where he won by 8 shots the last time a major was played there in 2012. Are you willing to put him now among the top 3 or 5 favorites for the PGA just based on 1 week? Because that's all we really have over the past couple months is one good Rory week. Is that enough to convince you that he is capable of winning that major?
He probably would have been top 10 might have been a stretch now that I think about it, but the top 15 otherwise. Had he not played Quail Hollow, which he almost didn't because of his neck locked up on Wednesday, and thankfully he had an afternoon tea time on Thursday and was able to get therapy and was able to play. We all know how that played out now. But even before this week, I think I probably would have put him in the top 15 or 20 just because of what he did last time at Kiowa. That was so entertaining to me. I mean, I can compare it to obviously a couple of Tiger victories. 2008 at the US Open comes to mind, and then his Open victory at Royal Liverpool with Tiger. But that victory at Rory's ranks right up there for me simply because I remember following him on the back nine on Sunday. And at this point, he was leading by 6, 7, 8 strokes. And he kept hitting driver down the middle of every fairway with that high draw that you just explained very, very well. And like, I was taken by, like, he's doing this not because he has to. He's doing it because he can. And I love that aspect of him when he was that age and he was fearless and he knew that when my game is on, there's no one that can beat me. So I think he already would have been somewhere close to there. But yes, after this, I definitely put him in my top five. How about you?
I saw him as the betting favorite now. He's leapfrogged guys like Justin Tom. Yeah, he's the betting favorite at 10-1, which to me was very surprising. I think I'd probably put him right on the cusp of the top five. You know, that was 9 years ago. He's a completely different player in person than the last time the PGA was held there. I'm not sure how much actual having course experience is going to help him. And I still think there were signs. Obviously, he got the victory, and that was very impressive. I still think there's signs that he's not where he wants his game to be. I mean, he was T76 in driving accuracy. He hit far fewer than 50% of his fairways at Quail Hollow. That's obviously going to be putting a premium at Kiowa because you're going to be in some really nasty spots if you're not finding a fairway. And that's something that he did at the 2012 PGA, is he was absolutely pounding driver and hitting it straight. His scrambling was very good at Quail Hollow. I think that'll also play a factor. And look, he had a great putting week. And when almost Rory has a great strokes. Putting week.
Yeah, he almost picked up 7 strokes on the field, which is really good for him.
He was third in the field in putting. If he putts like that, yeah, he's going to have a chance to win his first major championship in 7 years. I could just see myself putting probably 5 or 6 guys ahead of him in terms of who my favorite for the PGA Championship would be. But I think I certainly am more bullish on his chances now, having seen what he did at Wells Fargo, than I certainly would have last week, coming off what a miscut, a T28, and another miscut in his most recent start at Augusta National.
Well, we have a colleague, which I thought, this is funny because it's happened to all of us, where he was working. He was very, very, he was almost done. He'd done a lot of reporting on the idea that all of the game's top stars are struggling going into the PGA Championship. And of course, Rory doing what Rory did now, suddenly deep six sort of that idea that, okay, maybe they're not struggling very much. But to that point, and I'm sure this is going to be something that we can address on next week's podcast when we're both up in South Carolina, but you can kind of go down the list, and Dustin Johnson has not played great.
He's playing. He's in the midst of his worst stretch in more than 2 years.
Justin Thomas is putting is stone cold. John Rahm feels like his ball striking is a little bit off at the moment. I mean, we can keep going on and on down the list, and with Rory being the primary example. I mean, exception to this, Brooks Koepka certainly isn't playing very good golf right now. But it's going to be interesting when we're going to try to sit down next week and come up with favorites. I don't know that either you or I could come up with a definitive argument for, yes, this guy should be the favorite hands down. I don't think that person exists right now.
I would totally agree with that. And that's why I think, and we'll get into this at the tail end of the podcast, but there is a very good field that has assembled this week at the Nelson. Normally, kind of the week leading into a major is kind of sleepy. It's kind of a letdown. Everyone's gearing up for the major championship the following week. But man, we've got a really good field that we'll talk about here in a second. Rex, it was an interesting week in Charlotte also, not just because Rory won, but you also had this Premier Golf League / Super Golf League rival breakaway tour kind of reemerge. Everyone thought it was dead after that $40 million player impact program came out. He said, oh, that should keep all the stars happy. Well, I don't think it was a coincidence that news of this reemergence coincided with the first PGA Tour player meeting of the year. You were there. You were working your sources. You were trying to report out exactly what Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, was telling the players. Just how real is this threat? How real should we assume that the PGL / SGL is going to be in terms of the PGA Tour's future?
Well, I'll go back to, I'll answer your question with just an example of, we know now that Rory has been, if not him, then people around him have been in contact with various members of this group who was trying to start this breakaway league since 2014. And we know for a fact that last year it seemed to almost reach a head when it was called the Premier Golf League. I think now it's supposed to be Super League Golf, but I'm sure that's going to change in over different iterations. But as we got towards the Players' Championship, there was this undercurrent that a deadline's approaching, that who's ever in and who's ever out is going to have to choose a side. And I think that deadline pretty much got pushed to the side because of the pandemic. COVID-19 came along and everything stopped and people stopped having this conversation. It resurfaced this week. And I feel like I kind of compared notes. I talked to a lot of players last week and I kind of compared notes versus what these same players told me last year, leaving Mexico, because that's when, you know, the WGC in Mexico, that's when it came to a head, and what they're saying now. And I had come up with a spreadsheet last year when I left Mexico, because I wanted to kind of keep track. And those players who are in will not come out and say they're in for obvious reasons. If they do that, Monahan made it perfectly clear you're going to be immediately suspended. And
it's career suicide to come out and say, yep, I'm signing on. You would not have a place to play until at least fall 2020, at least fall 2022, if this thing even gets off the ground at all. There is zero incentive for these guys to sign up or announce their intentions.
Career That's suicide. Right. But the code word is, and I've come to discover this, is that if the word interesting comes out of their mouth, I find that interesting in any form, any iteration. That means that, okay, they're having conversations. They're on these people's lists, and these people have an interest in trying to get this player to come over, probably to be a franchise owner, as we understand a franchise owner to be now, of what they want to do. And this player wants to have a conversation. And what my takeaway of that is, long-term, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, is no, it probably will not work this time. It probably won't work next year. But as this continues to evolve and I start seeing more and more players start changing their tune and throwing that catchphrase out there, interested, at some point, everybody's got a price, man. And it may not work the year after that. But what I have learned over this last 12 months and even beyond that, what we know about this league right now is that they're just going to keep throwing money at people. And as one player told me yesterday as I was leaving Charlotte, everybody's got a price, man. And that's a terrible way to put it. And that's not going to be a very popular opinion. And I'm not sitting here advocating for this at all, because as an employee of the Golf Channel, I've kind of got a dog in the fight. You've kind of got a dog in the fight. We all want to see the PGA Tour survive. But as a reporter, I can tell you that I'm not comfortable coming on this podcast right now or writing in any form that this is dead, because I don't know that either this iteration is going to be the end of it, or this iteration is not going to work, because we're talking about so much money.
I'm interested in the fact that you said that these players are using code word to kind of tell us their interest level in this, right? Like they're saying they're listening. I've seen a couple people say that they're intrigued. Aren't these players, whether it's Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Ricky Fowler, all these guys who've kind of been linked to these rival leagues, aren't they just simply gaining leverage? Because when you're reading the tea leaves, it certainly seems like all what these guys want is guaranteed money. They want significant guaranteed money. That was kind of the purpose of the Player Impact Program, which goes against everything the PGA Tour stands for. PGA Tour and golf in general is the ultimate meritocracy, where if you play well, you're going to get well compensated for it. And the PIP kind of flies in the face of that, because you're giving $8 million cold hard cash to the player who moves the needle, regardless of how they play, they're going to get paid. And so is that what the guys are after? They just want guaranteed money, whether it's in the form of like an annual salary or appearance fees. Like what are they actually seeking?
That was one. I talked to one agent who has a player that's involved in this and has been in these discussions. And yes, I mean, this comes down to guaranteed money, and that's going to cause a lot of traditional golf fans. That's going to turn off a lot of traditional golf fans. I know that. And I know how that sounds. And as you pointed out, even the PIP sort of rubbed me the wrong way, because every time a player would complain over the history of this game, the answer was always the same. Play better.
Play better.
You don't like the tournaments you can't get into? Play better. You don't like how much you're making off the golf course? Play better. That's always been what people fall back on. And now all of a sudden it's, well, play better or be a little bit better at social media. See if you can engage with fans a little bit better. See if you can be that influencer that the PGA Tour is looking for. But beyond that, yes, the players want guaranteed money. And again, that sounds terrible to a lot of people. But I will point out athletes in every other professional sport, even amateur sports, are being emboldened in a way that we've never seen before. And when you have an athlete who makes a decision like James Harden to, I'm not only am I leaving the Houston Rockets, but I'm going to decide what team I'm going to, and I'm going to get the teammates that I want. When you have Aaron Rodgers, who is going to hold Green Bay hostage until he gets what he wants, there's no reason to think that our athletes would be any different.
However, I mean, they're just not going to get $35 million guaranteed like a Mike Trout or a LeBron James. I mean, they just aren't that type of superstar who can bend the league or the tour at their will. Not since Tiger, certainly, but even Phil wasn't on that level that you would say, yeah, that guy deserves $35 million a year to be well compensated like his peers in other leagues. And I think, Rex, personally, that I'm really curious to see how long the DJs and the Brysons and the Rickies of the world are going to let these links, these rival leagues, linger, because they're potentially tarnishing their reputation. They're basically saying, I don't care about the game's history, and I don't care about, you know, winning as many times on the PGA Tour as I want to. They're potentially squandering goodwill with fans because they just want to squeeze out a couple more million out of the tour each year. Like, that looks selfish. That looks ungrateful. That looks short-sighted. And that's not a good look. So that was one of the takeaways I had kind of with a week to sit on it. And my second one, and perhaps you can shed some light on this, can't the majors just shut this down? I know the PGA of America came out last week and kind of sided with the PGA and the European tours, but can't the USGA, can't the RNA, can't Augusta National just come out and say, yep, we're not going to recognize this rival league. If you play for it, you're not going to be able to play in the major championships. This thing's over. This thing is shut down if the major organizations come out and say that that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, that was the comparison, right, between the Super League, you know, in Europe, soccer, kickball, whatever you want to call it, and the comparison to golf in this particular case, because it wasn't fan outrage or player outrage that ended the Super League in Europe. It was because UEFA and the World Cup said that anyone who's playing for this breakaway league isn't going to be able to play in the World Cup or the European Championship. And for players, that was a big deal, and it died within 48 hours. So, yes, if when I reached out on Wednesday afternoon to the four major championships and they all got back to me with statements that said anyone that goes with this breakaway league will never be able to play in one of our majors again, that would have been the end of it. But I can tell you, none of them did that. Now, will they do that eventually? Perhaps. And my gut feeling tells me that whatever happens here, it's going to end in a courtroom, which is unfortunate for everyone involved, mostly the golf fan, because that's not where we want this to go. We want to be talking about brilliant performances like Rory's at Quail Hollow, not catching up with court filings day in and day out. I'm speaking selfishly on that front. And just to address something you said in a previous comment about there aren't athletes who are going to be able to net the Mike Trout kind of money in our sport. If these reports are to be believed, there are at least 10 to 12 franchise owners that this breakaway league feels like that they merit at least that much money.
You can have Justin Rose. You want Justin Rose for $30 million? Have him.
I mean, let's go down the list. Let's do the people who have been tied to this. It's Phil Mickelson, who when I talked to him about it on Wednesday, he dropped the magic word. I find it very interesting. And he went on to explain why he thought it was a good idea and a bad idea and how he's still sort of going back and forth on it. I can tell you, Bryson DeChambeau has been linked to this list. Henrik Stenson has been linked to this list. Adam Scott has been linked to this list. Now, is that the list that you would start some sort of
Justin
league
Rose,
with?
Henrik Stenson, Adam Scott, all over 40. Have them. Have them. Absolutely.
Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka would be the three sort of kingpins to this, I would think. And again, I mean, there has been no comment from any of those three. So that's just, they've been linked with reports. To be completely fair, and I have been told by one source who knows, that no one is committed to this. That there's a lot of guys who are interested, but no one is committed. And you and I probably wouldn't start a league with those guys. However,
that league is destined to fail if you start a league with those guys. Just being
they may not get the 12 they want, but they'll get 12. And as far as destined to fail, what's your idea of success? Are they trying to be monetarily successful? Yeah, you're probably right then. They would fail. I don't know what that's what they're trying to do.
If you get half of the top 25 players in the world, is that good enough?
Yes. If it's the right 25, absolutely. And then you start coming up with feeder programs.
It certainly doesn't sound like it's going to be.
Maybe not now. I mean, that's kind of the point of this, right? So, I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, I'd have told you, yeah, this is never going to happen. It's just a story that you and I are going to have to talk about once every 12 months. Now, knowing a little bit more than I knew last week and having a little bit better understanding of where this league is coming from. And look, there's a reason why we're all recoiling at this. Not because, you know, it's not that the greed, which you tried to.
Because we can see exactly for what it is. Any sane person can see what the SGL is. It's a grotesque money grab by folks who are trying to sports wash. That's exactly what they are doing.
Sports wash is the key. Like the money grab, I don't think is the part that gets us. It's the sports wash. It's because this money comes from Saudi Arabia and the Sovereign Wealth Fund. And I did a lot of Google searching on Saturday night because I was really, really curious. And it's $362 billion. So the idea that they wouldn't want to do this because they couldn't make money, as opposed to they want to do it because they want to sport wash what is a very bad image on the international market. I don't know which one of those I believe. Which one do you believe?
Look, I mean, the fact of the matter is, and maybe I'm in the minority here, I think what they are proposing sounds dreadful. And maybe I'm in the minority here, but to me, the WGCs that they have in the PGA Tour, those might be the least interesting events of the entire year, because you're just combining the top 50 players in the world and you're getting some players from far-flung tours. You're playing at mostly an uninspired venue and you're just competing for a lot of money. I think what makes the PGA Tour so great is you have, you know, so much diversity week to week. You know, you go to some interesting places, you have superstars, but you also have, you know, the sponsor exemptions come in, the Monday qualifiers come in, you have some Cinderella stories each week. I mean, that's what makes the PGA Tour great. And if you just throw in 48 players every single week playing across the globe, to me, that's wholly uninteresting. I don't know about you.
I mean, the concept is interesting to me because we all like team golf and we all like the idea of, and look, I'll let Phil.
But it's not really team golf. It's like a cumulative score thing.
I mean, I'll let Phil do the explanation here. He broke down the pros and cons.
Selfless act.
Is what he said. Yes, which is odd. Which was an odd choice of words.
That's going to live in infamy. Yes. Quote.
It was selfless because guys are going to have to give up their schedule, which seemed okay. Well, it seems to me you're going to be handsomely compensated, but whatever. You can go whichever way you want on that. But I think we always talk about this, is that there were so few times when Phil and Tiger Woods actually went head to head in a PGA Tour event. We can count on one hand how many times it really happened and it was meaningful. But if you were somehow going to find a way to make sure that happened at least 15 times a year, I'm kind of intrigued by that. I'm not going to lie.
Isn't that what you want in a major championship? If it happens every week, doesn't that kind of reduce the appeal of that?
Too much of a good thing. Yeah, yeah. There's something there. Absolutely. I mean, right, look, well, I mean, wait a minute. I really wish I could do the ESPN voice of what if I told you that there was three or four other leagues in the world sort of below these leagues that were all part of the same consortium, right? Like pick whatever league you want. Let's say the Asian Tour, let's say the Australian Tour, let's say the South African Tour. And now all of a sudden you've got a feeder system and you've got already built-in events. So let's say the Australian Open and the South African Open and Japan Open, whatever the case may be. And that's all part of this grand schedule. That's one of these 15 to 18 events. Now, all of a sudden, you start seeing, okay, now you see where the legitimacy comes from. Now you see how players can maintain the world ranking points. Now you see how these events can immediately be included in the world rankings. And you see a reason for a player, let's use Adam Scott, for example, because when I talked to him about this last year, he left no ambiguity. He said, yeah, I would love the idea of playing 15 times a year and hold up in Australia the rest of the year. So he plays 15 times on the Super League, and then he goes home to Australia, and maybe he adds a 5 or 6 events back home on the Australian Tour, and that's his schedule for the year. That's a pretty good life for him, and he's being very handsomely rewarded for that.
Are you saying there's going to be a class system where you have the upper class, the middle class, which is playing in a different league, and then the lower class, which is essentially the Corn Ferry Tour?
Doesn't that make more sense now? Does it?
It does make. I mean, look, I have pushed for a world schedule. I think that if the PGA Tour and the European Tour can combine forces, I think that would eliminate a lot of these potential hangups, and I think it would be extremely appealing for especially international players to play a schedule of 15 to 20 events, and you're traveling all over the world, that's more taxing on your body, and you can be more limited in that, and you're going to have better fields. Like, I think there is a future for that. I just don't like at all the idea of this 48 player individual tournament, $15 million to the winner. Like, it's just outrageous to me. And I think it just minimizes the regular season. These guys wouldn't be hungry anymore, because you win once and you're basically, you have generational wealth.
No, and I don't disagree with it. And I'm also not going to stick my head in the sand when this makes a lot of people recoil. Like, I get it. The sports washing, the Saudi Arabian links to this. I mean, this is going to be a difficult sell on a lot of different fronts, the least of which is whatever the media rights component would be of this. So, I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions, but I will go back to your original question. A week ago, if we were having this conversation, I would have dismissed this. I would have said, it's just something we're going to have to deal with every year, but it's never going to happen. I don't know if I'm that locked into that opinion now.
Well, we will see in about 17 months whether you are writing for SuperLeagueGolf.com as a senior writer. We will certainly see if that is. Meanwhile, back on the PGA Tour, if you want to cue that up as a segue, the Nelson is this week, 7 days to go until PGA Championship week. And as I mentioned, very, very good field. Hideki Matsuyama, fresh off of his two-week quarantine that was mandatory upon returning to Japan. He was able to celebrate his Masters title. We have Dustin Johnson, who has not played well, basically, since, conveniently enough, he won in Saudi Arabia. You have Brooks Koepka testing his surgically repaired knee. Jordan Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau, home game. What are you most interested in watching this week at Craig Ranch?
I'd like to see something out of Brooks. I mean, certainly we have seen him turn a switch at major championships, and I wouldn't be surprised if he did that in 2 weeks at Kiowa, but I'd like to see something out of him this week. But if you're asking me, like, the voyeur, you know, the guy who likes to see the car crash during the NASCAR races, I want to see Bryson DeChambeau, because when I talked to him yesterday on his way home, he went on one of his kind of Bryson, you know, tangents, talking about how he needs to work with Chris Como because the numbers that they're seeing aren't matching up with what they think. And I'm always fascinated by his, like, never-ending quest to try to redefine the game. Like, he's going to bend physics and the world as we know it to his will. And I just love this ongoing saga. I'm sorry. I'm very, very simple like that. I like simple shows, and this is a very simple show that I enjoy watching.
Yeah, apparently it is. And I am curious to see if Augusta National once again derails Bryson. He didn't play well there once again a couple of weeks ago, and now he's searching for answers and doesn't know where he's going to find them. Brooks is obviously a good bet to watch this week. I actually think his appearance this week is actually pretty promising. I remember talking to him at Augusta National, you know, kind of saying what's the plan moving forward, because you're coming off a missed cut here. He was clearly laboring all around the hills there at Augusta National, and he said he probably wasn't going to play again. Between the PGA Championship, just kind of letting his body calm down, let his body heal a little bit, and so he can be healthy enough for this grueling summer stretch that we have come up. So the fact that he's feeling well enough for a tune-up start, I think, is actually pretty promising. If you're going with Bryson, who is just easy fodder for you, I'm going to go with watching Jordan Spieth. Three consecutive top 10 finishes, of course. He won in San Antonio the week leading to the Masters, played well.
Shocking.
There.
Shocking development.
Had an outside chance to win. This is going to be his one and only start, of course, before the PGA Championship. But I think the way that he's playing right now, with his iron play as good as it is, with how good his chipping, pitching, and putting are, I think Kiowa is actually a decent venue for him to get back on the major trail. You got to keep in mind he was playing, let's see, 2012. He would have been just finishing his freshman year at Texas the last time the PGA Championship was held at Kiowa. So I think Jordan Spieth, he would certainly be, if Rory's on the outside looking in for the top five, I would certainly put Jordan among my top five favorites for the PGA.
Again, two shocking developments in one sentence. Can't believe you threw that at me, that you were watching Jordan this week and you would put him in your top five for the PGA. Get out of here. It's like the world's going to stop spinning on its axis.
Exactly. Rex, do you have anything else to add before we kick it again to next week, where we'll be both Kiawah Island. I'm sure we'll be doing this podcast. Obviously, there's no restrictions in South Carolina. I say we have a beer in Charleston, knock out this podcast, talk PGA Championship favorites, and our initial impressions from walking the golf course. What do you say?
IPA it is. Before you go, you were smoking some sort of dessert on your grill the other day. You sent me on Snapchat. You want to go ahead?
This was a moment. It was a really big weekend.
I see.
Obviously, Mother's Day weekend. And so on Sunday, it actually started on Saturday when we had smoked peach cobbler go on the Traeger, followed that up with bacon wrapped shrimp, which were excellent. It's like the exact football food you would want come the fall. I can send you the recipe, And then yesterday was a really big day. Mother's Day, of course, threw some filet mignons on the PK grill, grilled to perfection. And then we had, I think we threw the brownie cake in the oven, some mashed potatoes, lobster bisque. It was a good day. How did you celebrate Mother's Day in Charlotte, about 1,000 miles away from your wife?
Worked out in the morning. I think I called her about noon and wished her happy Mother's Day. So that was about it. Not nearly as exciting as you, although it just dawned on me, we were going to be staying in villas on an island that we probably won't have access to restaurants. To restaurants. So what we should actually do is do the podcast while you grill, smoke, burn, cook something.
I mean, are we actually going to have grills at our one-bedroom villas?
Perhaps. I don't know.
That's something that we need to find out immediately. But if that is the case, we need to do a video component for this podcast and post the video as well.
Well, last time we were there, we actually stayed in a three-bedroom villa on the island, and we didn't get caught in all that terrible traffic that everyone was complaining about. But
we had a great week last time. I don't know what all the complaining was about.
That was it. It was like, you know, when you grow up and you hear kids complaining about what it's like, you know, back home in their house or where they live, and you don't really know, but you just kind of we just nodded our head, you know, guys complaining about hour and a half long shuttle rides. And you and I would just look at each other. Yeah, man, that's tough. Like, I can't believe it. 5 minutes from the golf course, people. 5 minutes. Roll out of bed, walk to the golf course.
I mean, the only complaint I had that week was getting chomped by the mosquitoes that were, the size of golf balls. That was really the only complaint I had. I wasn't going to mention that to our kvetching colleagues.
I love that tournament. Like, everyone complained. Everyone hated Kiawah Island. I'm like, man, I love it here. This place is great.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to getting back.
Seminole Walker Cup real quick. That was awesome. I really thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yes. I mean, it's a bummer that the stomach bug or the norovirus or whatever they're trying to officially describe it as kind of ravaged both teams. Even the captains were getting in on the action. We had guys ralphing on the practice range before matches. So it was a little bit of a mess. And that's probably added up to why the Americans, who were actually the most stacked that you've ever had in the history of that competition with 9 of the top 20 players in the world, probably the only reason they won by 2 points and not more. But it was compelling action, and Seminole is just an absolute treat. If those of our loyal listeners remember the podcast from about a month and a half ago when I played Seminole during Walker Cup Media Day.
It was awesome to watch. It was an incredible competition. And again, Sunday at Quail Hollow kept my attention. There was plenty for me to focus on. But watching that and having played it before, it was cool. It gives me an idea, a greater appreciation every time I watch that competition.
All right. Well, that's all for this week's episode of the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. Rex and I will both be in South Carolina next week previewing the PGA Championship and, of course, recapping the Byron Nelson Championship. Talk to you next time.